ad wars intensify in the Jacksonville mayor's race. Good Tuesday morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and just ahead, why allegations of federal Hatch Act violations are flying, and cease and desist letters are flying back in the mayoral contest that you will all vote on in March. You can get on the line now and discuss this with us at 549-2937. Then later, it's America Saves Week, how you can start saving more and prepare for the unexpected. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, this hour, does a political ad for Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry violate the Hatch Act? Now, first enacted in 1939, the Hatch Act was passed to promote fair elections. It prevents officials from intimidating federal employees to vote a certain way. This act applies to local and state contests as well as federal elections. A Jacksonville pastor has filed a federal Hatch Act complaint against a Curry ad. It's called Cops for Curry, and it depicts sworn officers in uniform. He says it violates the act because government employees are engaging in political activity. Meanwhile, the Curry campaign has filed something of its own, a cease and desist letter against top challenger Anna Brochet. They argue her claims about murders in the city of Jacksonville in her latest television ad is a false and defamatory spot. All this as more bodies pile up in Duval. There have been more shootings this week. So as the candidates argue, the problem continues. Here to discuss it all, we welcome back to the show Daniel Cronrath, professor of political science at FSCJ. Good morning. Always good to see you.
Hi, Melissa.
And give us a call as we talk about these ad wars. Have you been seeing those ads on television? What are your questions and reactions? How do you plan to vote in March? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and let us know your thoughts on Facebook too. All right, Daniel, before we get into this, let's listen to the ad which drew the Hatch Act complaint from local pastor R.L. Gundy. This is called Cops for Curry. Take a listen.
Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry got most of everything that he wanted in the city budget, including more officers.
An additional $30 million for the sheriff's department.
I believe Lenny Curry has been a strong leader. Knowing that the mayor has your back like he does, knowing how much he and the sheriff work together to ensure we have the officers and equipment we need to protect our city, it means a lot to us. Lenny Curry is leading on the right priorities. He's had our back, and we have his. Lenny Curry is our mayor.
Okay, so the complaint has been filed alleging that sworn officers in uniform shouldn't be appearing in a political ad, that it gives the impression that the entire police force is behind the mayor. Curry's campaign has dismissed this complaint as a political stunt. What does the law say?
Well, the law is pretty clear. As you said before, the Hatch Act was set up in 1939. It's been amended several times over the years to do as you suggest, is to try to keep the politics out of federal employment. Which also applies to state and local employment, since in our system of federalism, so many federal dollars trickle down to these agencies. If you wanted to really look at beyond going to U.S. code, all you really need to do is just look at the instructions that have been actually provided by the National Fraternal Order of Police, which literally state in their two-page instruction piece that it is permissible for officers to endorse or oppose a partisan political candidate in a political advertisement, broadcast, campaign literature, or similar material, as long as the officer is not on duty and not wearing a uniform, badge, or insignia. So clearly, yeah, in this ad, we see officers who are not characterized as actors. They're not actor portrayals. That's not acknowledged in the ad. These are clearly uniformed law enforcement officers participating in the ad. Now, the first step in recourse would be these officers who participate in the ad should get in trouble with the agency that they work for. Okay.
Not likely,
since our sheriff has actually come out publicly and said he's seen nothing wrong with the ad. So, and I believe that this was the series of events which led to the Reverend reporting this to the federal government.
Okay. This is not the first time a public official has drawn a Hatch Act complaint. A couple of years ago, when former state attorney Angela Corey was running for re-election, she had an ad that aired on television that was somewhat similar, showing police officers in uniform Same issue cropped up, although nothing came of it other than, well, she lost that election. But people, when they file these complaints, nothing necessarily comes of them. It's more of a symbolic complaint. It seems there's no teeth to this law, really.
Well,
is there?
Certainly, at the end of the day, you're not going to undo the results of an election based upon this ad. You know, so even if the ad at this point were to be pulled, you know, you've already had a tremendous amount of damage done. You know, our first unitary election is March 19th. You know, this ad has received it's been an enormous buy that you can basically see in all of the network stations here in Jacksonville. The effects of the ad are very, very damaging. I mean, when you're looking at first person office,
why are they damaging in your view?
Well, obviously, this isn't law. This is just more, a political analysis. I mean, when you're looking at five first person officers who are looking at you directly in the camera, going out there on a limb to appear in an ad and telling you basically that what the mayor's opponent has been saying is bunk. It's a powerful ad. It's a powerful charge,
The purpose of the law is to prevent that, because officers in uniform convey credibility, authority, all the things that obviously incumbent wants associated with.
Right. Well, think about it this way. It would be almost inconceivable to think about somebody running for president of the United States and having uniformed soldiers appear in an ad talking about their commander in chief. That's not a stretch. I mean, that's a very, very similar. If you look at the chief executive in Jacksonville, in our sheriff's office, both of those individuals should not have, per the Hatch Act, uniformed law enforcement officers. What the founders would have considered to be executive officers when the Constitution was written, being represented that way in an ad in a purely political way. By the way, there are exceptions to be made. We've talked in the past about the nature of local elections and having perhaps moving to nonpartisan races. Actually, the Hatch Act allows that. This really comes down to partisan politics versus being able to be involved in an election where there's no party affiliation.
The election's in less than a month, meanwhile, and we want your calls as we talk about the controversy over the political ads that are flying on the airwaves right now. Give us a call at 549-2937. Okay. Now, on the other hand, the Curry campaign has filed a cease and desist letter against top challenger, City Councilwoman Ana Lopez Brochet. She put up an ad called "Is Your Family Safer?" arguing that Jacksonville's murder rate is simply unacceptable, pointing the finger at the mayor, saying he has responsibility for this. Their cease and desist letter calls this ad false, malicious, and defamatory. They've actually demanded that television stations stop airing the spot. The Brochet camp, they're recutting the ad. And so, what about that?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a misleading nature there, you know, referring to the time frame in which these murders had occurred over. It's a valid point, you know, to call it defamatory could, you know, obviously is very, very subjective in terms of it was so easy to recut the ad just to correct. You know, if you're in the Brochet camp, you would probably just say it's an honest mistake or a clerical error. Of course, in a political season, there are no honest mistakes or clerical errors, which really take place. So, it'll be interesting to see what the results of that are. I think you'll probably see the altered ad come back up before the election. Again, we only have, how many days remaining until the first unitary election. And then the other aspect is going to be there, too, is how much money does Brochet have left to actually push this ad out? Her PAC has raised money, in the short amount of time she's been in the race, she has raised a significant amount of money. But relative to the amount of dollars that it's going to take to go citywide between now and March 19th, one really has to ask is would the ability to get this ad cleaned up and out make that much of a difference at this point?
Okay. The election's less than a month away. There are six candidates total running for Jacksonville mayor, although two of them are write-in candidates. We have incumbent Mayor Curry, Ana Brochet, Omega Allen running as a no-party affiliated mm-hmm. candidate, and Jimmy Hill, another Republican. Omega Allen is African-American, mm-hmm. Drawing about 6% of the vote. At the last poll that we saw, right. Operating in a sense as a bit of a spoiler for Ana Brochet, who, in order to get Curry below 50%, she needs to draw as many African American and Democratic voters as possible.
Truth, at this point, really, any vote other than for Mayor Curry is a vote for Ana Brochet. If you think about it, however, in the first election, if Omega Allen or if Jimmy Hill were to do well in Atlantic Beach. Whomever can really draw votes away and keep Mayor Curry from getting over that magic 50% threshold, which prevents the May election, that's probably all fine and good if you're with the Brochet camp because it narrows the field. Interestingly enough, of course, you had talked about the latest UNF poll, which had come out. And I think if I were in the Beruchet camp, I would be encouraged by the fact that despite 3.5 years of name recognition, millions of dollars in the war chest, only 52% of the people in this county solidly have committed to vote for Lenny Curry. So a lot of people in conventional wisdom, political science, will say that undecideds at the end do break for the incumbent, typically. However, there is still a window there. If Beruchet can keep him, I mean, at 52% to be a mayor who's been basically unopposed until 2 months ago, if I'm in the Beruchet camp, I can take some optimism from that.
And do you think concern about public safety is the driver for that? Because the polling data, when we had the pollster on, he talked about the fact that public safety is the number one concern of Duval County voters. And among particularly Republican voters who care a lot about that issue, they strongly support Mayor Curry for reelection. And so these candidates arguing over the airwaves about the city's murder rate, which way is that issue going to break? When we interviewed pollster Mike Binder, he seemed to think the data showed it would break for the mayor.
I think so. I mean, he has the bully pulpit. He has a wonderfully produced ad, of course, that we talked about today at the very beginning. I think that, you know, what you also have to look at, too, in terms of law enforcement and safety is that this is an issue that's easy for voters to get their minds wrapped around. I remember many, many years ago in your conversations you've had on the show about Jacksonville Journey and about crime prevention programs and how they're not necessarily immediate gratification programs, they're long-term programs. So I remember listening to the words of Sheriff John Rutherford back at the time talking about our problems when the Journey was launched, saying specifically, we cannot arrest our way out of this problem.
Right, he said that many times.
However, the most visible thing for a voter is seeing uniformed law enforcement officers, which by the time they are involved, crimes have not been prevented.
That's right.
Crimes have already occurred. So, but still, when you talk about public safety and you see a man or a woman in uniform, that's the thing that voters tend to identify with. It's hard to get our minds wrapped around the, you know, after-school programs, mentoring programs, strengthening family programs, the things we really know that will prevent.
But those are the things that work in the long run, sure.
Listen, in just a few short years, the Journey bore fruit, and then the funding went away.
I know, which is so unfortunate, as many guests have pointed out on this program through the years. And as we talk about the city's mayor's race and the ad wars, here's a tweet from Jimmy. Whatever the past practice, having uniformed officers in these paid ads needs to stop. It's bad public policy to see the uniform in a badge in paid political advertising. As someone who supports police, I say these ads cheapen what's sacred and even put the officers at risk. Here's an email from a listener. You know, in prior elections, we've seen police officers doing the same for one candidate and some officers appearing for the opposite candidate. Why can't Anna Brochet get some officers who support her and do her own commercials?
She could if she wanted to violate the Hatch Act. And I think that's kind of the premise of the show today. There's really nothing to prevent her from doing it. However, it's going to be a matter of whether or not it's an illegality or not. And does the Brochet campaign want to have charges or accusations placed on her with the Merit Protection Board in D.C.?
And let's also... I'm just conjecturing here, but since Sheriff Mike Williams is clearly aligned with Mayor Curry, other sworn officers in uniform might not think it would be a smart move to appear in an ad with his challenger.
Perhaps not.
Okay. And as all this rhetoric over public safety goes on, the Times Union's reporting this morning another teenager has died due to gun violence. This happened Monday. This is the city's sixth teenager killed this year, this right after City Hall committed to start a new Cure Violence program, which has seen success in cities around the country, getting people embedded into neighborhoods working to stop violence before it happens. They're called violence interrupters. And we'll talk about that, too, as we take your calls here on the show right now at 549-2937. Mark is in Mandarin. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to know if for any of the races, whether there are scheduled any debates to be on either broadcast TV or radio. I remember one election we had when there were four debates. It was in a mayoral race. There were four debates before the runoff and three after, and I listened and took notes on all of them. I find those very helpful. I'd like to know if there are going to be any debates for any of the races.
There is a debate coming up. Thank you for that call, Mark. March 6th, it's going to air on several stations, including our own. This is going to be held at Jacksonville University the evening of March 6th, 8 p.m. This is the only televised debate it's my understanding, Daniel, that will feature all of the candidates, including the mayor. So if you're going to follow this closely, Mark, and anyone else listening, 8 p.m. on March 6th, turn on any local station and you'll see the debate. So that will be an interesting hour of television.
It should be. You're going to get all the candidates on stage. Of course, you know, there would be some who would like to see it just with the two folks participating, Councilwoman Brochet and the mayor. But, you know, this is appropriate, I think, you know, for the first election, March unitary election, before we've actually had any votes cast. We have folks who have qualified to be on the ballot, and this is going to be your opportunity, you know, to the caller. Maybe the folks who we are focusing on with Mayor Curry and Anna Brochet, maybe one of the other folks impresses you, and this is your opportunity to be able to learn more about that candidate and be able to vote. So it is a good opportunity for us to be able to learn.
It is. It'll be the only chance to see the candidates live on television, really speaking to each other, speaking to the moderator. It'll be Kent Justice of Channel 4 and speaking to the public. Really, this is a chance to speak extemporaneously about these issues, particularly public safety, which will dominate the discussion, I'm sure, for people that tune in.
Yeah.
And I believe every station but Action News will be carrying this debate. They're going to be hosting another televised debate with all of the other candidates, but not the mayor.
Right.
So there will be another opportunity for people to watch that. I want to make sure people are clear on that.
Right. And if you've had a chance to view any of the debates in the past, the JU Public Policy Center and Kent Justice from Channel 4 do an outstanding job with these debates. And I know that they're also open to the caller. If you're interested in submitting a question, I'm sure that there would be a way, if you wanted to hear it read, that you could also send that to Kent or send that to the folks at JU who are going to be putting on the debate if you had something specific that you were interested in learning from these candidates.
Let's go to Richard in Jacksonville. Hi, Richard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Richard.
My comment is I have a tattoo shop on Myrtle Avenue. And when violence happens over there, the police do try. They do get their lay. I know they have the little shot spotters, but the police do try and, like, solve it. But it's kind of hard when people don't say anything. And Anna Brochet is wrong for calling it the Curry crime wave. It's not like he's running out doing the crimes.
Okay.
It seems kind of disingenuous of her. That's about it.
All right. Thanks for that, Richard. Okay. Yeah. What about that?
Yeah. Richard, sometimes politics and disingenuity go together.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Okay. Imagine that. I would say one of the things which I am most optimistic, because I know it's going to be a long-term commitment, and Melissa, you had this on your show, I believe, last week, is the Cure Violence Initiative that the mayor is embracing. You know, this has its origins in the Chicago ceasefire program, which was started back in the late 2000s, where to give you some hope as a business owner, Richard, you know, the way this works is that crimes are thwarted before the police even become involved. It's the community training folks within the community to stamp out violent acts before shots are actually fired. It's effective. It works. And to your point about it being called the Curry crime rave, I would say the only thing that Brochet would say, Richard, is that, you know, it didn't stop Mayor Curry, President Mayor Curry, from calling this the Brown crime rave 4 years ago and laying all the not specifically in those words, but laying the problems with our violent crime on Alvin Brown. So some would just say this is tit for tat in terms of, you know, you couldn't solve the problem. You claimed you would 3.5 years later, and now she's trying to effectively politicize it. Whether or not she'll be able to do that or not successfully, we'll have to see.
Yeah. There's been a pattern now that's emerged through successive mayoral administrations of the mayor being held to account or opponents trying to hold them, whoever the mayor is, to account for this issue and demanding better results. And so whoever is the mayor of this city, unless the city takes a different tack than we have in the past, is going to continue to face these accusations of presiding over an unsafe city, presiding over a city known for gun violence, which isn't what Jacksonville wants to be known for. We've been the murder capital of Florida for the better part of two decades, and we've watched many years of attempts to get at the root causes of that. And now we're trying Cure Violence, which has worked in other cities.
Right.
And so I think there is hope that it can be effective in Jacksonville. Although, when you interview neighborhood activists and people that are kind of at the grassroots level, there's an enormous amount of cynicism and weariness about this.
Well, it's unfortunate. I mean, as a matter of public policy, we try to engage in the art of the long view, where we would like to say, you know, what is our current mayor doing to prevent crime or reduce crime 10 years from now? Okay. Versus trying to function as our chief law enforcement officer today, which he or she is not. That is not their role in the city. That is the role of the sheriff's office. However, as voters, you know, our mayor's here to serve two terms, and they're out after 8 years. The politics of trying to say, hey, invest with me in 10 years now from crime and crime will be down, doesn't necessarily to come create a political windfall for whomever that mayor is or whomever the party is in charge associated with that mayor. So that's sometimes why we have this disconnect into looking into the future of the city and having our policy match our politics.
It's 549-2937 as we talk crime, political ads, the upcoming elections. Renee is on the west side. Hey, Renee, how are you? Good morning.
Oh, I'm well, thanks. I was calling just to ask you guys if you had any information about the other debates, the ones that, like, Mayor Curry declined to attend, where the other candidates will be there discussing the issue.
Sure. As I believe I just mentioned, Action News Jax, which is the CBS and Fox affiliate, CBS 47 and Fox 30, they are holding their own televised debate separate from the March 6th debate, which will air on this station, Channel 4, and First Coast News. Action News is hosting a debate the following week, and it will involve Anna Broche and Jimmy Hill, the two Republicans, an independent candidate, Omega Allen. It will apparently air the following Friday. So that is the other opportunity to catch some of these candidates on television.
Sure. And if you want to be able to hear the, Mayor Curry's opponent's vision for the city without Mayor Curry being on stage, this is going to be your opportunity. You know, probably all of them will take at least one swipe, two or 15 against the current mayor's policies without having the without the mayor having the ability to defend himself. However, that was a choice. I know that Mayor Curry was invited to participate in that debate. But there is an opportunity then to basically listen to the candidates who are running without the mayor there.
Reggie is downtown. Hi, Reggie. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Two comments. First comment is, I hear a lot of criticism about the mayor, but I don't hear the other candidate presenting any hard line plans that she's got to reduce crime. But, the second comment is I really think that we've been attacking crime from the wrong direction. And that is, I don't think building more jails or having more police officers is the answer. I think the answer is we have to educate these kids, and they have to graduate from high school. I would say that there are very few people who commit violent crimes probably have a high school degree. And the other thing is that we as a community need to get together with the chamber and the city council, and develop some programs to have these kids learn from different large companies. They do this in Germany, where they have people who work for large companies at minimum wage while they're in school. And then when they get out of school, they have a trade. They're able to do something. If you throw a kid out, or if he quit school at age 15 and he can't hardly read and he can't write, what is he going to do out there? He's going to commit a crime. That's my only comment.
All right, Reggie. Thank you.
Oh, Reggie, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head. And to what we were talking about before with the Jacksonville journey, I mean, that
was exactly what he was talking about.
It was so chock full of programs, Reggie, in order to try to end, you know, you're making exactly the correct point. Poor education levels, high poverty levels, urban blight, all participate directly to crime. That's what I was saying before when Sheriff Rutherford, back at the time, now Congressman Rutherford, made the statement, we can't arrest our way out of this problem. He's referring to the fact that, man, we need to be investing in these solutions on the front end and not waiting for them to come on the back end. But let me also comment to your first question first. I had made a comment a while ago in a previous program about, you know, if Broche were going to have success in this race, Reggie, is that she needed to give folks sitting at home in their living room a specific reason how Mayor Curry has failed and how she would be able to solve it. And so far, and this isn't uncommon for politics, you know, we've seen a lot of criticisms, but, you know, if you're the average voter out there, identify one or two things that any of the challengers have said that they would do differently than Mayor Curry. And that's really where I think the challenge lies for any of these challengers to the mayor.
Right. You know, when she appeared on this program, she talked about investing more in the kinds of long-term prevention and intervention programs that Reggie mentioned. At the same time, I think what the mayor's office would say is that they folded a lot of that into a new agency, the Kids Hope Alliance.
Right.
And is that going to be a successful effort? You know, will that have the kind of long-term impact that people hope it will? that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and money doesn't solve everything, Melissa, but certainly there has to be enough money there in order to actually, you know, make it flow and to make it work and to be able to roll it out in a way which is going to be robust enough to actually make an impact versus it being, you know, piecemeal and just only given out to certain pockets or certain agencies where it's not going to be able to fulfill its design.
Alan on the West Side. Hello, Alan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
Yes, the reason I was calling is I've been listening a lot to how to disaffect crime in our area. And where I sit at, which is I live right off of McMullen, where it connects with Lane Avenue, I constantly hear gunshots. And I get with the police about it. And generally, I don't get a response for an hour and a half to 4 hours before somebody finally calls me back and wants to know if I'm still concerned about the problem. I have actually encountered several criminals that had weapons and run them out of the neighborhood, not because I'm angry person, but because I won't tolerate them in our area. And when I contact the police, more than likely it's going to take an hour and a half for them to respond to me, even though I've actually seen a weapon and have seen those people trying to break into houses and breaking into cars. It appears that what we've got is people that are in the police department that are handcuffed or not willing to take the time to aggressively go after these criminals. I see them all the time, and nobody's doing anything about it. And I'll take the response off the air.
Alan, thanks for sharing that. Sorry to hear that, too. And, you know, so many residents of this city can tell a similar story, unfortunately.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also too, you know, to come back into a little bit broader perspective here, Alan, a lot of these issues we've talked today about that we've been dancing around a little bit, these are sheriff's issues, not mayor issues in this town. Yet the only real robust race that we have going on that we've been talking
is
the mayor's race.
And yeah, Sheriff Williams at 56% support, his challenger Tony Cummings about 30%.
Right,
and that's
right.
A partisan split.
And that's right down. That's a party line vote right down, you know, right where you would think it would be. You know, so when you're talking about, you know, slow call times, slow response times, your inability to have a cooperative working relationship with your sheriff's officer on the ground, those are all things which really the mayor's office has absolutely no day-to-day role or function in. That those are functions of the command structure within the sheriff's office that, you know, we just haven't talked about this election season.
Well, we'll have you back to talk about that one.
Okay.
How about that?
Sure.
And you'll be joining us on election night as well. So we look forward to having you here the evening of March 19th. So Daniel Cronrath of FSCJ, always great analysis from you. And thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks as always, Melissa.
Still ahead, it's a movable feast with Metsa in Neptune Beach, plus how you can do a better job of saving this America Saves Week. We will be right back.
I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. I want to grow up to be a politician and be the old U.S. of A's number one man. I'll always be tough, but I'll never be scary. I want to shoot guns or butter my bread. I'll work in the towns or conservate the prairies. And you can believe the future's ahead. I'll give the young the right to vote as soon as they mature, but spare the rod and spoiled child to help them feel secure. And if I win election day, I might give you a job. I'll sign a bill to help the board to show I'm not a snob. I'll open my door.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Well, they are a much-loved eatery at the beaches, so what's the secret of their success? In today's Movable Feast, Lee Court speaks with Beth Ann Encinoza, general manager of Metsa Restaurant and Bar in Neptune Beach.
Have a banana, Hannah.
The beaches in Jacksonville is a cornucopia of great restaurants. And one of my favorites for many, many years is Metsa, that used to be, to many local people, called Metsaluna. And I'm just delighted to have Beth Ann and Sinosa with us today talking about what it's like to be the general manager of one of the hottest dining spots in our region. Welcome, Beth Ann.
Lee, thank you so much. So glad to be here.
What's it like? Tell us about Mezza. Bring us through your fine dining experience a block from the ocean with so many surprises once you walk in the door.
Certainly. Mezza never stops. When I first started working there 14 years ago, we had slow seasons. We do not have slow seasons anymore. It's such an active community at the beaches. In the restaurant itself, we have three different dining spaces. We have the main dining room, which is a more upscale, quieter feel to it. We have our covered patio, so you get the breeze from the ocean, just a nice outdoor courtyard feeling. And then we have the lounge area where the bar is, and we have music during the week. We have our wonderful pizza chef, Mattis, who makes pizzas with the kids, so it's a very family-friendly atmosphere during the week and on the weekends. We just enjoy ourselves a lot. We enjoy the community. We enjoy our neighbors. We're so lucky to have so many wonderful people coming in on a regular basis.
Well, I think that's part of the surprise of coming to Mezza. Because when you walk into the bar, there's usually music. Mm-hmm. There's this huge wood fire pizza oven.
Yes.
So you're not really thinking that behind the pizza oven, the restaurant opens into your spectacular fine dining space, and then, you know, one step further, you can bring your doggy and sit out on the veranda and have a casual evening.
You certainly can, and and that's one of the special things I think about the restaurant is we have so many different offerings. You know, you can come in on date night, you can come in for a birthday celebration. We do large parties as well, corporate events, and then we'll have a 5-year-old's birthday celebration in the lounge area making pizzas.
You have a fabulous, extensive menu that's gluten-free.
Correct.
Bravo. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, over the past number of years, people come in and they're asking for special, you know, they have dietary restrictions. So Eric and I sat down and made sure that we looked at everything on the menu, and then we started pulling it apart so we could create separate menus. So we have a gluten-free menu, we have a dairy-free menu, we have a garlic-free menu, we have a vegetarian/vegan menu.
I could eat there every day and have a totally free menu of different things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's important these days to be able to accommodate people's restrictions or diets or allergies, and because we are a small restaurant, it's just us.
We know exactly
what's in everything. So it's very easy for us to say, yes, this is gluten-free. Yes, this is dairy-free. No, there's no eggs in this.
Bravo to the chef.
Yes, certainly. Thank you.
Can we have a little finale with a mention of dessert?
Certainly. Well, our owner, Nancy, makes all of our desserts.
Now, that's very unusual.
Yes, she is in there every morning baking 3 hours a day. She is known for her bread pudding with Irish whiskey sauce. I think that's my favorite, second to the lemon cream cake. And then her cheesecakes. We have people that come in just for cheesecake, whether they just get it to go or they just walk in the door and say, what is her cheesecake today? Because she changes it every couple of
days. Beth-Ann, this is one of the best-kept secrets at the beach, the desserts.
Yes.
Because people think about Mezza, they think Italian, they see a pizza oven, but they have no idea that Chef Eric is making magic and her desserts are spectacular. Thank you. I look forward to bringing in my Boston Terrier. Mm. I will see you on the patio soon.
Everybody eats when they come to mine.
And in a moment, how to save for a rainy day this America Saves Week. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
and I ended up plunging into the tree branches underneath the water. And it turns out it was my brother who saved my life. And the only reason he saved me was because I was in his way. Seriously.
Join us for more True Stories Told Live. Next time, Stories of Family. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, a 2018 report at the Federal Reserve found that 4 out of 10 Americans would not be able to cover a $400 emergency expense. Jack's Federal Credit Union says it's committed to improving that number here on the First Coast. So they are participating this week in America Saves Week. It's a national campaign to encourage all of us to set a savings goal, make a plan, and save automatically. That's the key. Angie Coleman is Chief Marketing Officer with Jack's Federal Credit Union, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. What is America Saves Week?
Well, it's a national campaign to provide an opportunity to encourage members of the community to assess their savings habits and kind of really develop some good savings behavior. And, you know, we really want people to set a savings goal, create a strategy, and automatic savings we find is the key to success.
I think that is absolutely the key, because if it's not done automatically, so many of us just won't ever do it.
It's so true. Yes.
And why do we have such a hard... Why are America such poor savers? We're really bad at it.
Well, we really kind of are. And I really think there are kind of three reasons why. Most of us have affordable access to credit. We know that we can draw on that credit whenever we need it. And we don't really focus on it as a priority. We might contribute to our employer's 401k plan, but not our liquid savings. And also, we kind of have a hard time taking a look at needs versus wants. Many of us at the credit union have participated in Michelle's Singletary's 21 days savings challenge, where you try to go 21 days without spending money on anything that's not essential. And that's really difficult to do. You find yourself in the store like, do I really need that granola bar?
Exactly. All those impulse purchases add up. The recent government shutdown really showed just how precariously so many Americans live too. So saving is so important. Saving for that unexpected calamity,
right.
That unexpected expense.
Well, our credit union was originally chartered in 1935 by 27 federal employees. And while we're a community charter and open to the community, we still have a lot of federal employees. So we really kind of felt the pain after they went through two paychecks that they missed. But the reality is that any of us could find ourselves in that situation. And having those savings, even $1,000, will provide just a little bit of breathing room. And, you know, once you hit $1,000, to keep going. And it really is... It sounds like a lot, but over a period of time, it's attainable.
Right. Everyone should try to have at least $1,000 put away, which, you know, for so many of us is difficult to do, but it may take you a long time.
Right.
But you've got to just slowly inch toward the goal. Right?
And there'll be stops and starts along the way. Like you might, you know, save up to $50 and find that you need it. Well, if you can, you know, repay and just have an attitude of savings where you're always working toward that and you make it a priority to pay yourself first or save first and do it in an automatic fashion. Most of us, would we really miss $5 out of our paycheck? If we'd never see it and it goes into a savings account, you know, that money really adds up.
Yeah. And any bank will set that up for you.
Yes.
So you don't have to do it yourself. Okay. So in addition to the $1,000 in emergency savings, you have another trick you want to share. It's the 50-30-20 rule. What is that?
Right. So after you've set the emergency savings that we discussed earlier, you just look at your family's budget and allocate 50% towards your necessities, like your rent or mortgage or car payment, and then 30% for discretionary spending, like taking your kids to the movies or buying clothes. And then the last 20% should go to paying down debt or building your savings, and preferably a combination of the two. If you put all your money towards paying down debt and don't save anything, you know, that's actually not healthy. You need to strike a balance between paying down debt and saving.
That's another thing. As we talk about America Saves Week, the other side of that coin is how much debt Americans are in. So it's so hard for so many of us to save because we're drowning in debt.
Right.
And that makes it even tougher.
And that's a whole nother conversation for another time.
Yeah. But that, I think that's why so many struggle with this, because the minute they get a little put away, their car breaks down or they have some other unexpected expense, they use the credit card for it because they don't have the enough savings, then they're in an even deeper hole. And so this can be so, so challenging for so many of us. But as you said, baby steps. I mean, that's the key.
Absolutely.
Do better than you're doing today.
Yes.
Even $5 a week.
Right. And if you don't have an emergency savings cushion, you're really left with few choices, and none of them are ideal, because if you borrow or charge that fee, then you have to pay it back, usually with interest. And you're absolutely right, Melissa. You dig yourself a deeper hole.
Yeah. It's like going to the gym. You know, if you belong to a place where you work out, you know you should get over there and go, but you don't always go. And I count myself among that group. With working out, there's no way around it. You have to work out your body. You can't make someone do it for you. You can get someone else to automatically save for you. So that brings me to everything you're doing this week with Jack's Federal Credit Union. You're making this as easy as possible. You're doing most of the work for people so they don't have to really think too much about it, right?
Exactly. We're going to waive our $5 membership fee for new members who join with a qualifying first deposit of $5 or more during America Saves Week at all of our branches. And you can go to our website, jacksfcu.org, to learn more about America Saves Week and explore all of our savings programs.
Okay. And so how do you save before I let you go?
Yes. Well,
what do you do?
Well, I actually, when I first joined Jack's Federal Credit Union about 14 years ago, part of our new hire orientation was this lesson about saving. And they said, pay yourself first. So my paycheck goes into my savings account and I transfer out what I need to cover my monthly expenses.
Oh, you're so good.
I save first. Yes.
Wow. That's a good way to go about it, because most people do the opposite. They can't wait to get their paycheck, and then maybe they put a little bit in savings, maybe not.
Yeah, you really have to make it a priority.
So if you reverse the process psychologically, I think that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, and you have to be careful, because you don't want to keep tapping into your savings account, because there are Reg D limits on how many transactions you can have in a month. So, and that also is, you know, protects your savings so you don't tap into it too freely.
Before we go to the break, we've got a quick call for you. It's Ted. Hi, Ted. Good morning. Go ahead quickly.
Yes, I think the advice you just gave about putting money in your savings when you have debt, the interest you pay on a loan is way higher than interest you receive on a savings. If you can, you should pay off your loans first before you start saving. That is the first priority. Pay off your loans and then start saving, and not do both at the same time.
Okay. Agree?
I think that if you had an emergency savings cushion, yes, you should put more of your money towards that high interest rate debt. But not having an emergency savings account can really get you into trouble, because you don't know when you're going to need that new set of tires. You might be maxed out on that credit card. How are you going to get to work? You know, if you need to go to the emergency room and you have to pay your insurance deductible, where is that money going to come from? So having that emergency savings, I really feel, is a priority. And Americans don't prioritize that, by that study that you mentioned by the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System.
Okay, people, start saving even a little bit. And as Ted said, get rid of that high interest loan debt too. Angie Coleman, Chief Marketing Officer at Jack's Federal Credit Union, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And when we come back, the life-changing power of pets and how you can access that after this.
Calling all teachers. Wes Moore, the CEO of Robinhood, one of the largest anti-poverty forces in the nation, best-selling author, a combat veteran, and a social entrepreneur, will be one of the keynote speakers at this year's Teach Conference, a day to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, March 2nd at the Hyatt Hotel. Attendees will enjoy breakfast, lunch, a swag bag, and so much more. Information at wjct.org/teach.
After a bitter war, Vietnam took a friendly stance toward the U.S. and prospered.
We never forget the past, but now it's the best way to have a normal and friendly relation to to the U.S.
Another communist state, North Korea, took a different path. Lessons from Vietnam, ahead of President Trump and Kim Jong-un's summit there, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Marco Werman. On the world, we get an outside perspective.
I was born in Yemen.
So many people in Sweden.
Most people in South Africa.
Because getting outside yourself can be a good thing.
Once you move to a different country, you zoom out and you're able to see where is the other person coming from.
It is the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The country is split on what counts as a national emergency. But what about an international emergency? President Trump meets North Korea's dictator again this week. He's also invited China's President Xi back to Florida. But he's taking a much harder line with Iran and Venezuela. America's friends and foes. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Finally, this morning, the life-changing power of pets. That's the focus of the third annual Therapy Animal Expo and Symposium coming up at UNF this Saturday. Here with more, Dr. Carlene Taylor. She's a licensed mental health counselor, visiting UNF professor. Good morning.
Good morning.
And the Reverend Elizabeth Teal with Ministry of Animals. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
What is the Ministry of Animals, by the way?
The Ministry of Animals supports equity, compassion, and justice in all of our relationships. And it's basically looking at the idea that we are all available to be able to see the divine light of love through many interactions.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. And in that spirit, this expo coming up at UNF, Dr. Taylor, is really incredible. This is a way for people to access the healing power of pets. What all is on the agenda?
Well, the expo is a one-day symposium. It's a one-day conference, and there are three different tracks, and people have the opportunity, if you're interested in this idea of being able to volunteer or work with your pets and share your pet to help others heal, there's a track for you. If people are already volunteering or working professionally with animals, there's a track. And then for licensed healthcare professionals, educators, people who are interested in true animal-assisted therapy and working with animals as licensed providers or licensed educators, then we have a track for you as well.
Very nice. Learning more about service, therapy, support animals, and you brought a beautiful dog with you. He's here in studio right now. Eli is hanging out at your feet.
I do.
But Reverend Teal, it's not just dogs we're talking about, right?
No, it's not just dogs. It's within the framework of the conference, it would be any animal that is legally owned and domestic, because that's the shape you have to put on any kind of visiting pet work. I wanted to take it just a little bit back, because you put a whole alphabet soup of service dogs, therapy dogs,
emotional support. There's differences between them.
And there's a huge difference between them. And I think it's really important to highlight that this is visiting pet work, and all of these animals want to do this job, but they're all attached to an individual that is part of volunteering or professional with them. It breaks down to two things. You've either got working dogs or service dogs. A service dog is attached to an individual. A working dog can be anything from a therapy dog to a bomb sniffing dog.
They do so many things, as you just said. They also help kids struggling with learning to read. They help people going through the courthouse process, giving a deposition. They help college kids facing exams. Travelers at Jacksonville International Airport can visit with dogs in the Jack's Paws program because they're stressed about flying. It's amazing, all the applications.
It is, and horses as well.
Horses, too.
Horses as well.
So all this symposium will really educate people about a wide range of therapies, which is exciting.
Absolutely. And in the last 5 years, we have some really good evidence-based research that's come out that demonstrates that if you will pet a dog for 10 minutes, it will lower your your stress hormones and increase your oxytocin. So we have some good scientific research to support what we've known anecdotally for 25 years.
The UNF Brooks College of Health has a new certification program in animal-assisted therapy in counseling as well.
Yes, we do.
That's exciting.
We are very excited about it. We're one of the few programs in the country to offer this animal-assisted therapy certificate in counseling. It's three courses. It's available in the credit program of the Brooks College of Health or through the Division of Continuing Ed for people who are already postmaster's degree. And it's a certification that is aligned with the American Counseling Association competencies.
That's pretty cool. And Reverend Teal, quickly, you work as a volunteer pet therapist with your dog. People that are interested in getting into pet therapy themselves, they can learn more about this on Saturday.
Oh, absolutely. If you're interested in volunteering with your pet, I'm going to shift the language from being a pet therapist because that's really kind of mushy language. People who have happy, friendly dogs. Being a happy, friendly dog is not enough. Being a happy, very socialized cat is not enough, but it's the only place you can start. But the world really needs you because the world really is brightened by the fact that you are trained to visit with your animal into a wide variety of places. I currently go into the classroom every Wednesday to help children learn how to read, and it is amazing. It is just the most joyous thing. I watched a kid the other day learn, mom. I mean, you know, and he said it to a dog.
Ah, that must have been magical.
It was.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're interested in coming this Saturday to the third annual Therapy Animal Expo, go to unf.edu and search that those terms to register. This is coming up Saturday, so people still have time to enjoy this and learn a lot. So thank you, the Reverend Elizabeth Teal, Ministry of Animals, and Dr. Carlene Taylor with UNF, and she's also a qualified counselor supervisor in Florida. Thank you so much, both of you, and for bringing Eli to the studio, too.
Well, Eli doesn't have the face for radio, but he says thank you for having him and your hospitality. He's
yes.
glad to be with us as well.
He's been the star of the show for sure. Mm-hmm. And that is our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Our director is Michelle Corum. If you missed anything, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. And if you're listening this evening, the Electro Lounge is coming up. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.